Tuesday, June 30th. This is the day of President and Mrs. Arlich's visit. He's the first Latin American chief of state to make an official visit to Washington in our administration. We met them on the South Lawn at 11 o'clock. Hot sun, flags barely moving in the still air, 21-gun salute. It was good to see our old friend Raymond Tellez, now ambassador to Costa Rica, but formerly mayor of El Paso during the campaign of 1960 when I was there with the Kennedy girls, and when Mrs. Raymond Tellez assisted in an all-out, bang-up tea party for us. Thomas Mann had President and Mrs. Arlich in tow. After the welcoming ceremonies were over, I went in the house to make plans for my house guests. This is sort of like a reunion. Mary Rather is up on the third floor, and the Donald Thomases, with Jane arriving from Europe just in time for the dinner, and the Frank Irwins coming in to spend the night, and Mr. Kellum, the most important house guest I ever have. It means something special to me to have him here, though he is hardly the state dinner type. In the afternoon, I had a good visit with Don on my daddy's estate, which seems to be in the process of being eaten up and eroded during Ruth's lifetime. It is a sad story, something Tennessee Williams and William Faulkner might have collaborated on. I wonder what will happen to the brick house. I worked on the mail and studied the guest list and the after-dinner dancing list. Yeah. Put on my yellow chiffon sheet that really bells out with enough fullness for dancing. And then at 8 o'clock, we met the Arliches and took them upstairs along with the Minister of Foreign Affairs and Mrs. O'Duber, the Ambassador and Mrs. Fascio, the Raymond Tellez's, and Angie and Robin. I do believe Mr. Fascio was one of those who had been to the ranch when a group from the United Nations came down. Linda came in, anxious to demonstrate the gifts, particularly the rocking horse that neighs they were sending to their five-year-old son, and Smokey the Bear for the small baby brother. For the President, they had an elaborately tooled western saddle made in San Marcos, and for Senora de Arlich, a silver necklace in the squash blossom motif by a New Mexican Zuni Indian. My gift from them was an antique necklace, and Lyndon's an artifact that I simply loved. I'm have to set up a museum to hold them all. It was a vessel, a sort of a jug, a far, far older than pre-Columbian vintage, with a sort of a stylized animal, like a jaguar, depicted on it. It was a big dinner, about 180 guests. As some columnists put it, including a former Vice President of the United States, Henry Wallace and Mrs. Wallace, and two who might be Vice Presidents, Senator and Mrs. Hubert Humphrey, Congressman and Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt, Jr. Beside those congressmen who have to do with Latin American affairs, we had also invited those of Latin American heritage, such as the Joe Montoyas from New Mexico, the Henry Gonzalez from San Antonio, and the Ed Roybals from California, and Delegate Fenos E. Cern from Puerto Rico. And I was particularly glad to have the governor of Puerto Rico and Mrs. Munoz Marin there. She was at my table and livened things up. On the literati side, there was John Dos Passos, whose trilogy on USA caused a perfectly good University of Texas president to lose his job. I mean the fact the president, Homer Rainey, had it on a reading list for students. And on a much lighter side, two comedians of different eras. Old-timer and favorite Jimmy Durante, who took the microphone and did some singing in the middle of the evening, and young Woody Allen, who had entertained in a salute to the President. Also from show business, composer Richard Rogers, and Mrs. Rogers was at our table. Handsome, lean David Rockefeller, who is chairman of the business group for Latin America, and whom I remember from my trip to the Modern Museum of Art, was there without Mrs. Rockefeller, who was off on a summer vacation. Evangelist Billy Graham and Mrs. Graham made a very fine-looking couple, and I'm sure came as a surprise to some of our guests, such as, perhaps, Princess Alice Longworth, who was once the belle of any White House party, and she was still outstepping everybody else in wit, according to one of the columnists. She suggested a ticket of Johnson and Jackie.
Well,
there was a heavy contingent of Texans there, because while I'm here, I want to take care of some good friends who've done so much through the years. The Roland Boyds, the Cecil Burneys, the Albert Jacksons, John Runyons, the Claude Wilde Seniors, and the Sam Winters. Beside, of course, my house guests, the Don Thomases, Jesse, Mary Rather, and the Frank Irwins. I've always called the Milo Perkins my own State Department for South America, so of course they were there. And Scott Kirkpatrick, who always gets me tickets that can't be got at the National. And my own secretary, Ashton Gunella, and her new husband, John. and friends of ours who have been especially nice to Lucy, the Harry Birds of Winchester, Virginia, and the Robert Miners who wanted to be her hosts when she came to Princeton, and old friends like Tony and Ann Buford, besides those who had to do with Latin American affairs, either through the Ford Foundation, our banana companies, our universities. Music carried us through the evening, beginning with the Marine Band in the hall when everybody first arrived, and then the Air Force strolling strings who came in with the dessert and stayed through the coffee, and the transition back to the East Room, and then Lester Lannan with his most complete orchestra took over. A large group of additional guests arrived, with accent on about 25 of Linda's and Lucy's special young friends, the gayest of whom was Stafford Hutchinson, and including a lot of young people who were up here working for the summer, sons or daughters of good friends. Charlotte Ford, one of the loveliest, daughter of Henry Ford. The Orliches met the new guests, danced a few dances, and left a little past 11. And it was only then that I began to explore what was really the most delightful facet of the evening, the dancing al fresco on the rooftop over the motion picture theater. Bess had opened up the double doors from the East Room out on top of the theater. She'd borrowed a trick from the Elms, where we'd rarely operated on a small budget, and had put down some sheets of linoleum, which make a perfectly good dance floor, scattered small round tables around the edges, put up clusters of softly lit white Japanese lanterns that swayed at the end of slender bamboo poles, and borrowed greens from the National Park Service, which were both a decoration and a screen from the sightseers along Pennsylvania Avenue. It was an enchanting setting, an inspiration for a hot summer evening, with the view southward to the monuments, past the lighted fountain. Lester Lannan's music was great, and although I read with some annoyance later on that one columnist had gotten out of the whole evening the headline, "White House Star Isn't Quite Up to Par," it was true, Lyndon did have a cold, said so, didn't dance many dances, the courtesy ones with the guests of honor, family, and a few others. I couldn't get enough dancing, and we both stayed until nearly 1 o'clock. I think it must have been 2 before the last guest disappeared. Upstairs, we had a nightcap with the Irwins, Jesse, the Thomases, Mary had already gone to bed, Dorothy and Sam Winters, and the Claude Wilds, and then to bed. With the satisfied feeling of a hostess who knows she's had a good party and a unique party. Albeit, it was not thanks to my inventiveness, but Bessie's.